Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. This is Lisa Anderson here with you. And just a little preview of what's coming up later on. We have a listener who has some married close friends, but she feels like they've kind of gone off the map and is wondering, is this something she should try to recoup with them? Or does she need to go and just find some more single friends because these married friends are not showing up? So I'm going to weigh in with hopefully some encouragement and advice. And then for our culture segment, we have Dr. Greg Smalley back for part two of our conversation on 12 questions that a future father-in-law should ask his son-in-law to be. And we remember it was super great last week hearing from Greg, and so we're going to finish out that conversation this week. Well, here we are for our roundtable, and we have got a great bunch of folks here. We have got Kim, Austin, and Jeremy. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hey.
Good to be with you.
Well, we're going to have a conversation about lessons learned from our families of origin. And hopefully we have all gotten to the point where we've actually learned something and recognize it's funny because I remember, you know, you have this situation where maybe for some people it's the first time you go to college. For some people it's like when they get married or when you just realize that, oh, people actually do life differently than you do and have the same, you know, or have different assumptions about certain things than you think. And that can play into the way you relate to people. It can play into conflict. It can play into the way you make decisions. And so we're going to hopefully offer some personal stories and some insight and some expertise. Jeremy is representing our counseling department here at Focus. So this will be good, I think. So, well, let's talk first about some of the good things. Like, how do you guys generally feel about the way you grew up and kind of some of the good habits and maybe ideas, maybe behaviors that you took into adulthood that you think this was pretty strong? And this is, I'm grateful to my family for having raised me in this way and taught me these things.
Growing up, my parents would always, every Sunday we'd be in church. It was, I don't know if I can remember a week that we didn't go to church. It was always very strange if we weren't. And my parents were always super involved, serving in different ways. They taught different Sunday school classes. And that really, as a child, I wasn't super into that. Mm-hmm. But now that I've grown up, I definitely see the value in that. And I love being a part of a church and serving there now.
Yeah, that's great.
One of the things that I grew up with is every time we would leave the house, my mom would, in essence, give us a benediction. Hmm. And that benediction was, remember who and whose you are, and then the door would close. And I went through life kind of hearing that, not really understanding it, but I knew she meant, you know, don't get in trouble, your reputation is on the line. Mm-hmm. And when I got to college, she said it another time, remember who and whose you are. And it dawned on me, she's talking about remember who you are and remember that you're a child of God. You are my daughter, but yet you're a child of God. And as I go throughout life, I think of that often. And I hear many people talk about identity in Christ. And so I feel fortunate that I was given an identity here on earth, but then that my identity truly lies in Jesus Christ. And so to kind of have that as a foundational component of my growing up, I feel that that was very fortunate. I'm just you know, that's a great legacy to leave your kids, and I'm grateful for that.
Oh, wow. I love that, Kim. I think of my family of origin, and one of the things being kind of a rural family, I'm a first-generation college kid myself years ago, was really a work ethic. You know, show up, do what's right, work hard, don't take the lazy path, and don't complain about it while you do it, too. And, you know, that has paid off. And also being in church every back then it was every Sunday night and Wednesday was the culture that I grew up in, and so much value came out of that. And as a counselor, you know, we know that there are many great things we take from family of origin, and then there are many things you take that are hard mm-hmm. or that you want to transform. And I think this is a great topic, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think for me, growing up in California in the 80s and 90s, I feel like my even then, you know, California was fast tracked, sadly enough, in like broken homes. I mean, I remember being one of the few people in my friend group that had both parents in the home. And so just the impact that that had on me to feel like, you know, I had that security and both my parents loved each other and cared. And there was a lot of integrity there. And even after my dad passed away, I remember I wrote the little piece for the back of the bulletin and just talked about faithfulness. And that's the one word that I would describe, you know, in which I would describe him. And so I think that was quite a gift and how, you know, and there were, you know, and we'll talk about this too, there were kind of weird aspects of that too, and that there was probably some legalism that crept into my family as a result. And, you know, you do the right thing and maybe we don't talk about why you do the right thing, but
right.
you just do what you're supposed to do.
All
because
coins
that's
have
the Christian,
two sides. Yeah.
That's the Christian thing to do and whatever. But I never saw my parents as hypocrites. They always, who they were in public was who they were in private, and they were hardcore about a lot of things, but you never had to question whether or not they were being real or anything. So that was cool. Okay, moving into, you know, ways that we grow and things that we learn as we become adults, what would you say was kind of one of the first instances, or if you remember just any instance, of where you started observing the way other people relate or other habits of other people and saying, oh, what? Not everyone does it the way I do it. Or this is like, there's some difference here, or there's a different way of thinking about this or being this way. What would you say were one of your first aha moments?
I would say more so once I moved out from my parents, once mm-hmm. you move in with your first group of friends, that really is a good aha moment of,
yeah.
oh, people were raised different than me, and they don't think that, I don't know, kind of talking about the cleaning up after yourself, just like how they do that differently. It would drive me crazy to have roommates that are like, did your mother not teach you to do this how my mom did?
Mm-hmm.
It was just funny to me to look at it like that. But
mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, I think of, and it's still something that visits me today, is what you spend money on and what you don't and how you're frugal.
Okay.
My wife reminds me, well, you get what you pay for. And I'm like, well, let's get the cheapest bargain with the coupon you can get. And these are some of the things that still play out. I think I had like a meatloaf and mashed potato microwave lunch that was like a dollar. It didn't taste good for lunch today. And I thought of my wife. Yeah, I got what I paid for when I bought that sale. And these things still play out in
but
little ways.
But you only spent a dollar.
I only
That's
spent
so
a
awesome.
Dollar on the meatloaf and mashed potato microwave yeah. lunch because it was on sale. But these things follow us, but we also can kind of be playful about them and transform them. And I don't do that all the time, but I recognize when it shows up and,
yeah.
and why I did that. Oh, there was that thing from my family.
Yeah, for sure.
This is a good question. I think about gift giving and I just seeing how like people give gifts and just learning to not outgive them. And I think I learned that from different families, you know, when I would meet new people, you know, I'd be so excited to give a gift. And that's kind of one of my love language components.
Mm-hmm.
And I would give a gift and then, you know, I would get something back in return. And then I was like, oh, that wasn't a reciprocal gift. It was just a token. And so to understand that, I think that's really
yeah.
when I began to learn a little bit about families and how other people were raised. They weren't raised to, you know, just put everything out there. They were like, I just want to appreciate you.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm trying to buy something huge.
Yeah. It's funny because the first thing for me that came to mind was affection. So, and I didn't start noticing how affectionate some people are until my siblings started getting married. Because then, like when my sister got married, all of a sudden, like her family members, anytime we would see them, were just like hugging me. And I'm like, I don't know you people. Why are you hugging me? Like my own parents don't hug me this much, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's just weird
mm-hmm.
because for them it was totally normal
mm-hmm.
and quite frankly, probably a good thing and something that our family could have learned from them. But it just seemed so awkward and invasive, you know, and I was kind of like, yeah, you know, why do they have to just go around hugging people and stuff? But realizing, you know, being from a largely Scandinavian family, that was just the culture that we were in, was like, you know, kind of, you know, I love you. And when that changes, I'll let you know. But don't expect me to be all hugging you every time I see you and stuff. Yeah. And it seemed kind of fake, you know, and so you just make this assumption when truly they probably weren't trying to be fake at all. I think to Jeremy's point, the whole church thing too. I mean, I remember, you know, after college, moving away to a different state and being like, you know, when I had friends who were not in church several times a week, because I had so grown up, like, if you really love God, you know, you're going to be serving in every capacity and you're going to be. And I was kind of like, are these people even saved, because they're only going on Sunday mornings? And so, just having all these like judgments about people and stuff like that. It was pretty interesting. So what about when, like, what would you say, what are some things that really can track towards being unhealthy? Like things that we really should be looking out for. In fact, how do we, as we're trying to mature as adults, because I think this plays into any relationship we're in, whether it's friendships, whether it's with coworkers, as we're dating and preparing for marriage, we should all be growing and, you know, getting good. You know, I was telling you guys before we started taping, not long ago, I wrote an article on receiving and giving feedback. And we all say we want that, you know, and we want to grow and be sharpened. But do we really? Because it's sometimes hard to hear. So what would you say are some of the things where maybe there are rough edges that you need to, some bona fide red flags look out for that could be potential growth points for you?
Well, I think I would start by saying we all have a family of origin stamp on us. And that's kind of what we're having fun with and telling stories of. It's when you're kind of not insightful about it. You're not aware of it. It's normal to have that stamp. But what you want to do is be insightful and reflective and take input and then decide, what do I want to keep and grow and what do I need to leave behind or transform? And if you're totally, you know, sort of my way or the highway, or, you know, we were the only right people in the world, when you start having roommates or a marriage or a serious dating relationship, that's not going to play well. So rigidity and non-flexibility with whatever it is not healthy. And then there's also instances where maybe there was something abusive or off kilter and you need some coaching or mentoring or even counseling around that to begin to realize, oh, I don't want to bring that forward and I need to figure out a way to kind of be coached out of that mode or pattern, whether it's conflict resolution, how you use your voice, yelling, you know, whatever it might be, the substance issues, how you deal with food. I mean, we get so much from our family of origin that we may need to graduate from.
It's so interesting that you say that, because it reminds me of a guest we had on the show years ago who was talking about how, as she started dating guys, she eventually woke up to the fact that she kept dating all these guys who were either alcoholics or had addictive behaviors, and realized that her dad, as an alcoholic, was that, like, that was just her normal. That was just how she'd grown up. So those were the kinds of guys that she was attracted to because they seemed so familiar. And for her to break out of the familiar and date someone that behaved totally different than what she was used to, that was very uncomfortable for her. And so yet she was settling for this kind of behavior, and she realized it was just completely game-changing for her when she learned how to turn away from that and not accept that, you know, as okay.
And a lot of that can be rather subconscious.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, again, a girl who loved the Lord, wanted to date well, wanted to marry, but just didn't know the difference and what that looked like. Austin or Kim, any thoughts about, like, how you've had to process things of, like, yeah, maybe this is an area where I could learn from others or grow differently, maybe take on some new behaviors or attitudes in this area?
I definitely, going into relationships, I try to look at my actions and how I'm being, because it's different to how you treat the lady you're with rather than the boys. So I often try to think about the fruits of the Spirit while I'm in a relationship, and if what I'm doing, does it align with what God says his gifts to you will be? And if it's not, then I try to adjust how I'm acting, or at least if it's coming from the other person, have some healthy conflict on how to move forward with it, not just let it sit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good.
I'm not sure. I think it's always about questioning yourself. Where are you? And then where is this other person? And I know trying to, in a marriage, let's say, trying to measure, is my response appropriate to what just happened? And I just remember learning very early on in marriage that if I'm not content with what's going on in the situation, extracting myself from that situation and going to pray about it has really been my probably best line of thought. And then just letting God change the situation, changing my attitude. And then sometimes I go into it and I think, okay, Lord, if you could just change him, I'd be good now. But it's not really about changing him. It's probably about changing my attitude. Mm-hmm. And then also taking a close look at where that person is coming from. Because often when you're, coming from your family of origin, your family is always handled a certain way. If you're a non-confrontational family, you always handle it non-confrontationally. And you don't learn the other skills until you are actually in the situation. So if you're in a situation where healthy conflict is happening, but you're not comfortable there, then you tend to go back to that mode. But sometimes you have to be bold and stand through that and walk through the situation to be able to come to a resolution. Because while you may be right, they may be right, but finding the best solution is really what you should be after together in that type of a situation.
Yeah. I think conflict for me was the biggest game changer. I would say that I still am learning how to do conflict better, because my family's way of handling conflict was to completely ignore it. And so to have grown up with that many patterns of complete passivity, and then if things got really heated, then it just became passive aggressive. And that was like, I still remember my mom, and this is a woman who loved Jesus, who was so relationally healthy in so many ways. I remember a very bona fide conflict happening and my mom just saying, just drop it, just put it under the blood. All of a sudden we'd get all these like euphemisms for just don't address it, just walk away. And then it would just simmer, and then until the next conflict came up, and then you would like use that passive aggressively against the person to kind of like bring it up and open up old wounds and stuff and hope that that kind of moved the needle. And it was just so bad. And I remember, you know, having friends who actually did conflict pretty well. And I was like, oh my goodness, you mean we're really going to like talk about this? And it was so bizarre to me to actually address something. It was a great learning experience for me. But
yeah, you go in when you start to experience something different, it's like you're swimming in a new lake.
Yeah.
It's like
it's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. It's not normal. But then that's healthy to introduce new things and to take that risk and to, you know, see how other people do that. I had to learn, you know, I said earlier I had this family that was kind of pull yourself up by the bootstraps and mm-hmm. do life and don't complain about it. And that was good. And yet the other side of the coin is didn't necessarily learn a lot about human being rather than human doing in terms of processing emotions. So, you know, maybe I need to take a break and take care of myself and do some self-care. And when life finally built up to a place where, you know, I couldn't balance all the stress, I had to learn that because mm-hmm. of some breakdowns, some anxiety. And so I learned the hard way and in a good way how to do self-care and emotional care and then help others do that as a counselor, because I didn't exactly learn that from my family of origin, even though I learned a lot of great stuff mm-hmm. from them. And it was a great thing to have the pull yourself up by the bootstrap, work hard, get life done kind of ethic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, every strength also has its weakness or its Achilles heel. And being able to learn those, just like you did, where You know, your friends taught you something new. Your spouse will teach you something new. Your fiance, your friend groups, mm-hmm. And growing from those places.
Yeah. And some things, you know, some things are big, like conflict is a big thing. And or the way you, you know, again, there are families that have patterns of unforgiveness or patterns of whether it is, you know, sin patterns or generational, you know, addictive patterns or whatever. It seems like a lot of people trend into those things. But what would you say kind of as we close out here? What if you have made strides and you see growth in yourself and you've learned new things and you want to shed some of those old things while still keeping the good things, but your family keeps trying to pull you back into the old patterns or they think you're going to return home, you know, and to Austin's point, you know, now you're out living with roommates and stuff, but you come home and you're just their kids still. And they're like hoping that it's everything's going to be as it was in the old days and stuff. And they're kind of trying to pull you back into the stuff that you think's unhealthy. What do you do about that?
Can I take a counselor stab at that? Is that okay?
Go ahead.
Because there's this big word I love in counseling called differentiation. Hmm. And the word differentiation is basically just means I'm appropriately separate, but I'm appropriately connected. Hmm. You know, I'm not enmeshed, which is all glommed together, and I'm not cut off like reactive. Oh, I've got to move to New York because my parents live in California. The balance of being separate but connected is differentiated. I know who I am, but I also know where I came from. Mm-hmm. And I can appreciate that, but I don't have to react to that. And that simply just takes practice. It takes being apart from your family, learning things, coming back, representing yourself with integrity, using a lot of I-based language. Well, I'm learning this, or I've considered this, or, you know, again, not reacting, not always having to push against it, but just showing up as a core solid self when you come back into your house for holidays and those mm-hmm. kinds of things, and learning to be who you are in the presence of those that you grew up with, separate but connected.
Yeah, that's good.
I see that too. When I think about going back to the home for the holidays, I think of, well, when I was a kid, I was the baby of the family that gathered for holidays. And so I didn't really ever feel like anybody listened to me. You know, I was like, well, everybody's going to do this and we're talking about that. And then it'd be like the baby's voice. And then everybody go, uh-huh. Okay, well, now we're back to this. And when I finally kind of stepped into that, it was almost an identity component of saying, oh, wait, I'm valued and my opinion is valued. And then also giving myself the space to think and talk and contribute and to feel like I was joining with them and not trying to talk above that, you know, like try to be heard and be, you know, out in the crowd, but joining with it. And I think when I changed that to be a part of the conversation and to have input and to laugh with, I think that made a really big difference on how I felt about whether or not I was heard. It probably wasn't that I wasn't being heard. It was probably how I felt about my contribution to the conversation.
You matured emotionally and you showed up with those more mature emotions in how you interacted with your family. Mm-hmm. You weren't coming in, you know, Kim the young one. You were coming in Kim the adult. You're showing up with what you've learned from being out in the world. Mm-hmm. And that's being separate but still connected to exactly. your family of origin.
That's good.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, Kim. When I go home, it's now interjecting myself, whereas growing up, you just sit on the sidelines, more or less. And I've had the talk with my mom recently about now that I'm engaged, I'm doing the cleave and leave. Like, sorry, Mom, but this is how she wants to do things, and I'm going to do things a little bit different than how I grew up. But
yeah, it's tricky.
It is.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Well, thanks, you guys, for weighing in on this. There's always more we could say, but hopefully this will give everyone a good start for just starting to process their own stories and where they go moving ahead from here. Thanks. The first day that I took a breath, I woke up already blessed. Been with me ever since. Been with me every step. To the top I overflow. With your love, I gotta let it show. Like a moon, I wanna love like you. here we are for our culture segment. And as I promised last week, that was a two-parter. So this is part two this week. We have Dr. Greg Smalley back here in the studio. And we are talking about 12 questions that every father should ask his future son-in-law. Hey, Greg.
How are you? Thank you for having me.
Good to have you back. I had to actually put a little placeholder here as to where we finished last time, you know, because I'm like, okay, we're working through these questions.
It was a fun discussion.
It is a fun discussion.
I think we've got some surprises, too.
Yeah.
As far as the questions.
And you even said, I mean, you said that this is a great, you know, cheat sheet for guys.
It is.
Because you maybe ask these questions. And even if you're not asked these questions, you need to think about them because these are important.
If you have great answers for these questions, pass flying colors.
Okay.
Guarantee it.
Maybe the guys should just type out their answers now. And then when they meet with the dad, they're just like, allow me to show you my portfolio. Yeah. Here it is.
Because Dr. Greg says this is what you should be asking.
Yeah. And then I'll give, at the end of this show, I'll give everyone your cell phone number.
Please.
So that they can just call you and get personalized advice. That's great. Okay. No, we're going to jump in. We went through the first three questions last week, and so we do have to make some tracks this week because we have another eight to go. So, but we're going to do this. Number four is, do you agree on core values and big dreams, which was kind of alluded to with the are you united spiritually, but values and dreams do kind of take it one step further. So talk to us about that.
You know, this could be something along the lines of, you know, I want children. Mm-hmm. Well, wait, well, I don't want to have children. Well, that's a little bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a missionary. Mm-hmm. Oh, you couldn't pay me enough to go on the mission field.
Mm-hmm.
It's really those big kind of dreams that they're important to the individuals. They need to align.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's just, it creates incredible conflict that would be a huge red flag. So I just wanted to hear more about from Caleb,
mm-hmm.
now my son-in-law of 3 years, just what were their big dreams and are they united around those things? And, you know, again, there was no big red flags that stood out, but that's certainly what I would be listening for. Is there something important mm-hmm. to the individuals that they don't agree on? And then I would have encouraged them, well, go talk to a counselor and really work through that.
Well, and what I think is interesting about this is you're not saying this is about, like, are you into exactly the same things?
Not at
all.
Or
are you talented in the same things? This
nope.
isn't about, like, now I, you know, you and Aaron go and do marriage stuff and you have this ministry together and whatever. But people can have differing skill sets and different passions and still be compatible in that sense.
And I'm looking for, I tell you, a core, I think, foundational concept in marriage is there has to be room for both people.
Mm-hmm.
And so part two that I'm looking for is there room for both individuals and their dreams and hopes and desires mm-hmm. within this relationship? Because if not, that again, huge red flags.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I dated a guy once that I caught on pretty quickly that he determined he was the main deal. And I was kind of like, I don't think there's even room for me in this dating relationship, let alone a marriage.
That's awful.
I don't think it had anything to do with me even asking questions about me or any of my dreams. So I was like, yeah, I need to be out of this one. So,
and I tell you, just now watching Caleb
mm-hmm.
3 years into their marriage, Taylor now wants to pursue graduate school.
Hmm.
And that may or may not have been even a part of her dreams when they were talking about getting married.
Yeah.
But it's been so fun to watch him. His attitude is, well, I want to be your dream maker.
Mm-hmm.
What are you passionate about? What do you feel God calling you? And how can I make that happen? To the point where he's going, you know, here's how I think we could actually get that done.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of spirit and attitude I was looking for.
Yeah. Okay. Question number five. This seems to be one of the older, more traditional ones. And so, you know, unpack this one a little bit for us. How do you plan to financially support my daughter?
Yeah.
Now, was Caleb just like, I'm not. I'm hoping she's going to support me.
Well,
that maybe.
Well, actually, the bigger message was, I'm not supporting you guys.
Oh,
and so you're not living
too.
In my basement. Because Caleb was not finished with college yet.
Oh, okay.
So he was pursuing his engineering degree. And so I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to understand, okay, I get that you're still going to be in school. Now, Taylor was graduated already with her nursing degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's making a very good living as a pediatric nurse.
Hmm.
And so, yeah, I just wanted to hear what does that look like for you guys? And I loved it. I mean, Caleb had a really clear plan. Mm-hmm. I imagine this is one that he knew I'd ask him.
Yeah.
So it was very well rehearsed and very clear, such that an engineer would provide me. But I liked the plan and I felt really comfortable. And again, I wanted him to know that you're not living with us.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of couples that get married in college, and my middle daughter, she has some good friends that just did that. And I'm like, if you guys can't support each other and do this on your own, why are you getting married? Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me would be a huge red flag.
Yeah.
So it was good to hear his response. And again, it's not like this was a pass or fail.
Yeah.
I just wanted him to know that as long as they agree on it, I'm great, as long as you know that I'm not supporting you.
Yeah. Okay. An insider tip, probably answering with, I'm going to be a YouTube star, bruh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not the best.
Yeah. In your basement.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. So please, for the next 10 years, support me in that, because it'll take
a
while.
Wrong. Yeah.
Wrong. Okay. Would you marry you? That's a really interesting question.
Yeah. And this is the one that I really stumped him with, because Caleb is a good aerospace engineer, tried to read up and kind of predict what would I ask him. And he, for the most part, was pretty right on through most of these questions, but I got him on this one.
Okay.
And here's something my mom used to say to me. So when I was single and just asking her, you know, about, you know, what should you look for in a mate? I loved her response was, don't look for the right person, become the right person. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, honestly, having Lisa worked as in the marriage field now for 20 something years, I would say this one is one of the most important elements of having a great marriage, and that's that the individuals need to be healthy. The individuals need to be committed to growing. And, you know, two negatives might equal a positive in math, but that formula will not work in a marriage. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to better understand his understanding of his own growth areas. And that's really what I was asking him about was, you know, at this stage in your life, you know, you're not perfect. You've gone through things. You will go through things. You have imperfections. There's issues that you're dealing with, junk that you're bringing into this marriage. Do you understand what those are, and how are you dealing with those things? And at this stage in your life, based on some of what's gone on, would you marry you? And it was good discussion. I mean, he was honest with some of the things he struggled with. And that's what I really appreciated, because I wanted him to know that, Caleb, we can talk about serious things. I'm not going to judge that. I've got my own junk. And yet, just an opportunity for me just to encourage him, keep dealing with that stuff. And we'll never arrive at health, but are we willing to grow together and pursue individual growth as well as growing within our marriage? And so I, you know, again, appreciated him talking through some of what he's been through and what he's done and what he's learned.
Yeah, that's cool. The next question, what do you like about your relationship with my daughter? Now, how do you ask that question without just getting like, oh, I just love that we laugh together? And I mean, it seems like it's so easy to answer really in a surfacey way. What were you actually getting at with this one?
Yeah. One of the things that we teach that's a part of commitment is there has to be a decision that we are going to stay together for a lifetime. There has to be a grit factor that I'll do whatever it takes when we run into trouble. But a part of commitment that people don't often think about is what is it that you value about the marriage? What do you value about the relationship? So really this question's getting at, do you enjoy my daughter? What is it about your relationship that you really like? You know, there's some people that slide into engagement. Well, we've been together for a long time and I just owe it to her. I owe it to him, you know, versus, I mean, do you guys actually like each other? Do you enjoy each other? Do you like spending time? Do you like hanging out? It's just, this is not, again, a pass or fail. This is just one, it gave me an opportunity to see that, you know, treasuring, valuing your relationship's important. So what is it that you like about it? Was a great opportunity. And again, I liked hearing parts that he really values about their relationship and his commitment to growing that relationship.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think it's so helpful for pre-engagement too, because I think from what I hear from married couples, that there's often this assumption among pre-marrieds that like marriage is just going to be this big sexcapade and it's going to, you know, and when really, when it comes down to it, you're years in and it's like companionship and moving forward in life and supporting one another. I mean, the underpinnings really of the relationship are, you're going to be doing a lot, you know, more time hanging out in Home Depot and watching TV and, you know, building a home together and stuff than you are going to be having sex and being on vacation.
It's true. And I love the relationship with my wife, Erin, and just the fun that we have and just our commitment to being friends. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we like each other. As a matter of fact, I tell Erin, you have to tell me you love me. Like, I know that, like, mm-hmm. I don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. What causes me angst and what I worry about is, do you like me? Mm-hmm. And I love that she would say that she likes me. Yeah. She likes hanging out with me. We have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We deal with problems and raising kids. I mean, we do all that.
Yeah.
But when we're together, we really do enjoy each other.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to combine the next two, which are, do you have meaningful communication and how do you manage conflict? Which I think are two things that everyone thinks they do well and no one does well.
Right.
No one does as well as they certainly could. The whole like meaningful communication, I would love for you to talk a little bit about, is there like a test for that? Like, how do you even know if you're communicating? Because people who grew up in non-communicative homes, they might think they're just awesome. And like, you know, I say two things a day, I'm a good, you know, whatever. And then the other person's like, you don't talk to me.
Yeah.
So what does that even look like? And then clearly conflict, you need to talk to us.
I think
that,
for a lot of married couples, they talk, but what they're doing is they're administrating their marriage.
Yeah.
They're talking about schedules and to-do lists and tasks and things. It's a little mini business meeting.
Yeah.
And understandably so. It takes a lot to manage a marriage, a life together, especially with children involved. But sadly, that begins to dominate the conversation. So all of a sudden, when two people who are exhausted and tired at the end of the day actually have some time to talk, it's usually to have a little business meeting. Mm-hmm. And people get super bored. Mm-hmm. And that can turn very problematic because they stop talking. Mm-hmm. Versus, are we taking some intentional time to go after our inner life? How am I feeling? What are you stressed out about? What was the high of your day, low of your day? What are you dreaming about? It's just the inner life conversations will never happen on their own. All that work talk will happen. You have to force the conversation to actually include more inner life, like going after my wife's inner life, getting to know that part of her, stay current, stay updated. And so it was, this probably was less of a help me to understand that versus it gave me an opportunity to really talk about mm-hmm. the difference and seed mm-hmm. that you're going to fall into the same trap that the rest of us do. Mm-hmm. And don't let that work talk dominate your marriage. Keep investing time in who Taylor is. And hopefully she's investing in your inner life as well. Cause that's how couples grow closer together.
Yeah.
The work talk won't get you there.
Yeah.
It's necessary.
Yeah.
But that's not meaningful.
Okay. Related to conflict, what did Caleb say? Did he say they'd had conflict and worked through it? Or
yeah, definitely. And that's what I was looking for.
Okay.
You know, has this been just, you know, reunion? Erin and I, during our whole engagement, were in different states. Hmm. So every time we were together, it was a reunion.
Yeah.
And so we didn't deal with a lot of conflict. And that's, we struggled with that early on in our marriage versus, does he understand that one, conflict, totally normal? It's going to happen. Everybody's going to experience conflict. And how do you guys work through your conflict in a way to where both of you feel good about that? Mm-hmm. So I just asked him, give me some examples of how you've worked through conflict. Does he care about my daughter's heart? Does she matter? Does his heart matter to my daughter? Mm-hmm. Have they worked through some harder conversations? Mm-hmm. You know, more so than just, you know, thinking about, you know, where do we want to get married or what flowers or music or what preacher is going to do this. I mean, have they really worked through that? And if not, that's honestly, that would be a bit of a red flag mm-hmm. because you're so different that there's no way that two different people aren't going to bump in to some difference and have to have worked through that. So yeah. It's, yeah, the lack of conflict is not the sign of a healthy marriage.
Okay.
It's how we manage conflict that's going to be healthy or unhealthy.
Right. Okay. Next question. We're on to question 10 here. And this is one that I think for most couples, I would just love to be a fly on the wall, because I think you could get any number of responses to this. Everything from haven't talked about it, no, don't, what does that even mean? The question is, do you and my daughter agree on biblical roles and responsibilities? So, I mean, this is one, you're going to get a basic understanding of their knowledge of what that even is,
right,
and then what their thought is on that, maybe a little bit of doctrinal leaning and stuff.
Yeah.
So how did that go?
You know, it wasn't a real super deep conversation, and really what I was looking for is the difference between, so Aaron and I, God created us as equals, as husband and wife, we're equal. We just have different roles. Mm-hmm. Does he understand that? Mm-hmm. You know, when the Bible talks about leadership and submission and just the different roles of respect, of loving through sacrifice, does he really understand that that starts with that as husband and wife, you're on the same level, you're equal. You are to submit unto one another first and foremost, but there are different roles. And what does that look like? And I asked him, you know, what does that leadership look like for you? How has sacrifice, you know, presented itself within your relationship to love my daughter sacrificially, dying as Christ did? Yeah. You know, how does, you know, what does respect look like? And from Taylor's standpoint. So just it gave, again, an opportunity just to look at that. I was trying to, again, seed that there's 100% equality there. You just have different roles.
Yeah.
And have you guys talked about that? And actually he said, not really. And I said, but that would be one of the things I'd encourage you to talk about. Mm-hmm. is go through Ephesians 5 together. I mean, Paul's talking very clearly about these different roles. Mm-hmm. We can choose to ignore that. Well, no one wants to talk about submission. Well, you need to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to God.
Yeah.
He has it in his Bible.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah.
If you don't know, get some mentor couples. Ask some couples who've been married 3, 4, 5, 10 years longer, and how does that play out? And what does that look like? Help us to begin to understand those things.
Yeah. And even practically how some of those things play out. Because I know so many couples who've had the awkward conversation of, like, you know, very assumptive things of like, oh, no, clearly you're going to like homeschool our kids. And she's like, I don't want to homeschool
right.
anyone, let alone our kid, you know,
right.
or who's going to stay home? Who's
yeah.
going to do? What does that look like? What, you know, how are decisions going to be made when it comes to that? So I think that's chore distribution, you know, just different things that are interesting to walk through. All right. Have you had a range of experiences together? And I remember someone telling me one time, like, you should only date, like, or you should date and have experienced all holidays together or something like that. And I mean, I don't know if that's a timeline or what, but what range of experiences?
Yeah. And I like that. I mean, that's more of what I was getting at, that for some couples, you know, maybe it's been a quick engagement, or it's they haven't been dating that long, and maybe they haven't gone through the highs and the lows, the good and the bad, the routine, the mundane of hanging around watching Netflix, all the way to dealing with a job loss or not getting into a graduate school or whatever issues are out there.
Mm-hmm.
For Caleb and I knew this one already, because this is actually when I knew that I wanted this boy to be my son-in-law long mm-hmm. before he even asked me. And it's when my dad, kind of the final days of his life, Caleb brought Taylor down to kind of say goodbye to her grandpa. I was there. And literally the moment that my dad was dying and about to go into heaven, is, you know, obviously this really emotional moment. And I just felt, I was standing next to Taylor, kind of leaning over my dad's bed. And so I'm just feeling someone just gently, lovingly, really rubbing my back, my shoulders. Mm. And all of a sudden I noticed that I thought it was Taylor, but then I see her hands and someone's still rubbing my neck. And I realized it was Caleb.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just imagine that here, you know, this, you know, this marriage expert, very, you know, well-known figure, Gary Smalley is passing away and he's there rubbing my neck. And that at that moment, I was like, man, I love you, boy. And I hope that you ask me for my daughter's hand in marriage someday. But all that to say that, see, that's a range of experiences. Because then he got to see her grieving. He got to be a part of our family grieving and saw a different side of Taylor, a different side of us, even. So it's those kinds of experiences say a lot. Now, I also tell you that that's a part of the, what the research showed is that that couples who have had a good range of different experiences, they do better adjusting early on in their marriage. So that's why that's important. You just, you learn a lot. And because I always tell couples that, hey, when you're dating seriously, that a big part of what you're doing is you're watching, learning. How does this person handle you? How do they treat you? And so as you experience these different, or when you have these different experiences, that's going to tell you a lot about who this person is. So otherwise, it's hard to really to know some of that.
Right. And I think after going through all of these, I think the last one is a good summary and a good check. The question is, are there any relational red flags? And even I think the idea that, have you even thought of the potential of red flags? Have you examined the relationship and stuff? How did that question go down?
Yeah, and I think this is where like the whole cheat sheet idea for a young man, this young woman thinking about marriage, look, you know, on this list, they give you a whole bunch of those red flags.
Yeah.
You know, just because if you have some of those, it's not, it doesn't mean, you shouldn't get married. It means you need to go in and get some premarital counseling to deal with some of those. So how I was hearing this was just tell me your love story. What was that like? I'm listening for, you know, did he just decide, well, you know, we've been dating long enough and now we just, you know, I owe it to her, or, you know, I'm so afraid that I'll lose her unless we take this step, or, you know, there's some significant issues, maybe a previous, marriage that I haven't dealt with, or just some of those kinds of things is really what I was just listening as he was telling kind of their love story. That's what I'm listening for. But, you know, for the average dad, you know, we don't necessarily know what are those red flags. So this again gives a good cheat sheet to go, okay, here's 10, 12 and listen for those. And if they're present, then that would have been my encouragement to him. I would have said, I want to give you my blessing, but I can't because there's some of these things that are big red flags. I hope you respect me enough to understand that these are present. And are you willing to go get counseling? And if you're willing to do that, then come back and let's keep talking about this. But you got to deal with that stuff. Now, remember, like I said, this is still at the end of the day, Taylor's decision. And I would walk her down the aisle to whoever she chooses. And I mean that. I would hope she respects me enough to that if I have concerns, mom has concerns, that she's listening. But at the end of the day, she's the decision maker. They are the decision makers. And I kept reinforcing that. This is not me saying, yes, you should get married, or no. This is me going, man, you know, as I listen to all this, you know, I can give you my blessing. But it's still, at the end of the day, it's your choice. So for those dads who can't, or for that person who's interviewing who can't, then that would be my encouragement. Don't cut them off. Don't say, if you get married, I'm out. I won't come to your wedding. Don't do that. But just let them be adults and go, here are my concerns. But don't give up on them relationally and take that sort of stance. I never would have done that, because I would hope that by me staying with them, even if I didn't agree with what they're doing, that God maybe can use me in their life at some point. So,
well, it's a great list. And again, as I said at the beginning, we definitely could all be reading through these now, whether you're dating, whether you aren't dating yet, whether you're heading towards engagement. Just great things to keep in mind and to be working through. And then, ladies, give a copy of this to your dad or your uncle or the guy in your church who's kind of a mentor to you, the person who you think would stand in that role, so that they're prepared. And again, guys, you know, be prepared to even preempt with these questions and be like, you know what, maybe I'm not going to be asked these, but
because December is the biggest month for
it is,
you know, proposals.
We're coming into the holiday season.
So you know there's these discussions are going on right now.
This could be it. And so hopefully at your meeting, a shotgun will not show up, but these questions should. And so be ready for it. So, Greg, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Being part of this and drafting these and giving some insight toward
them.
Thank
you.
Well, folks, again, as I said last time, we have the book Ready to Wed, 12 Ways to Start a Marriage You'll Love. And what better, more inspirational way to get some groundwork for that. That book we want to make available to you for a gift of any amount to Boundless. So just go to boundless.org. You'll see the book right there. Our own Greg Smalley authored it with his wife, Erin. And so just great practical examples as well as a lot of good principles as well, biblical principles for moving towards marriage. Click on the resource, give your donation. We will send this book to you. So again, Greg, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, everyone. We are finishing up the show with our inbox segment, as we always do. And this is a question from one of you, our listeners, a real question, a real situation that you're walking through. And so today's is no exception. Our listener says, I am single, never married, and have some lifelong friends that I've been close with for over 20 years. Both women are now married with kids. I'm best friends with one of them, but she is now very tough to get in touch with. I understand that she's married, has two kids, a husband, and a full-time job that take priority over me, but I'm having a tough time and I need her support. Sometimes I feel resentment because I'm not getting responses from either of them. Is it better to seek out more single friends versus trying to keep up my relationships with my married friends and disrupting their busy lives? Is there any way to stay close to my married friends while I'm single? Well, I hear you. This is tough, not only practically as to how do you make this work or will it even work, but it's also tough on your heart because, like you said, these are friends that you have had for 20 plus years. It's not like you can just say, hey, let me just replace you with a newer version or a different version. So there are lots of things involved here. And so I'm definitely feeling you. And I have been there myself. So just a couple things. You mentioned one of these friends being your best friend. And really, I would say this goes for either of them. You are probably going to be served best by sitting down with one or both of these women and just having a frank conversation. Now, we often don't want to hear that because we want to just be passive or be like, just hope for the best that it'll turn out or that they'll come knocking on your door and being like, we've totally drifted apart. Let's fix this. But chances of that happening are probably pretty slim because these women, like you said, are crazy busy. So you're probably going to have to just be honest. Give them space. Now, we know, and we're big proponents here at Boundless, of especially newlyweds, giving them space in their new marriage to adjust and prioritize that. And it is important. But at the same time, they are your friends and you can share your concerns and you can actually, find ways and probably be part of the solution for these concerns as well. So another caveat based on your question that I want to bring out is you mentioned that you've been having a tough time and need support. I do want to make sure and encourage you that you're not only contacting these women when you need something or when you're in a low spot or when you're, remember, friendship goes both ways. it's a two-way street, and it's both the highs and lows. It's rejoicing with those when they rejoice, and it's grieving with those who grieve. And so make sure that you are being supportive and you are pouring into the relationship instead of just being a taker or being the person who contacts them when you need something. So, you know, the other thing just to keep in mind with both of them is that approach it from a matter of being kind of inquisitive. So your friends actually may not know that they're doing this. They may not realize, you know, that in their prioritizing that you've kind of been left by the wayside. Maybe they think that they're spending more time with you or having more connection with you than they actually are. And so you don't want to go to this conversation with an accusatory manner or kind of this idea of superiority of like, well, if you weren't such a terrible friend, you know, we could probably get somewhere. So be humble in it, be kind, and really show that your whole goal here is to be like, I really like you and I want to, you know, continue this relationship and be friends with you. And so how can we make this work? That said, I am also going to encourage you to diversify, and getting a few single friends probably is going to help you. And so not that you chuck these other women by the wayside, but, you know, single women who are in your same stage and kind of walking through the same stuff, they're great friends to have, and you can be mutually edifying to one another. And so always keep your eyes open and be prayerful about other people that God might have you meet. I know my roommate was great at this. She would actually, like, whenever she moved to a new town, she would just pray actively about who God would have her befriend and what her next relationship would look like that she could pour into. And so that's just a great way of being positive and proactive about it. So in this, go ahead and move forward. Again, don't hold so tightly onto the past relationships that you're not open to new ones, but also treasure the relationships that you have and tell these women that you care about them and you want to be in their lives. So that's it. And I hope that's encouraging to you. Folks, that is it for this week's show. As always, we do want to hear from you, editor@boundless.org. And hopefully you can give us some great ideas for future shows, or you can find a question maybe that we've answered that will be helpful to you. Otherwise, we will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org, focused on the family.